Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Good evening and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsburg. I'm Fran Ginsburg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Maureen Seberg, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-815-9756, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Hello, Fran, and I'm still here, unless I'm speaking to you from the afterlife. I know we didn't all pass away on Saturday.
Saturday at 6:01 p.m.
was predicted. You know, it's funny, that was a bit of a phenomena that was kind of sweeping around. I mean, it's certainly not the first time in history when the end of the world was forecast and predicted. But the thing that made this one a little unique was that organization and that preacher was spending a fortune of money.
I understand that's not the first time he spent a fortune of money and was wrong. So
really?
this is something that's repetitive on his part. I don't understand why, though, this time around the media picked it up so much.
Yeah.
That was what was unusual. I mean, we had pretty mainstream media picking this thing up.
I think that's always the case, you know, when the predictions and forecasts, and especially when they're dire, are hot topics for the news, you know. So I wasn't.
There's always somebody walking through Manhattan with the little signpost that says the end of the world is near.
Well, you know, so but what was the purpose of the advertising? I mean, what was the goal, to let everybody know? Was it a warning? What were you going to do about it?
Well, I think he was asking everybody to pray to be saved.
Oh, I see.
So you know, because only select people were going to be able to actually cross over.
Right. So, I mean, if you firmly, you know, were had the knowledge that you were going to, the world was going to end, if you truly believed in it, I mean, what would you do? I mean, would you spend your time...
You mean if I had absolutely no doubt?
No doubt.
I mean, this guy had to have some doubt. I mean,
yeah.
He was wrong before. He couldn't have, you know, I mean, of course, when he spoke publicly, he came across as, you know, this is absolutely true.
Right.
But he had to have had some doubt, you know. I mean, we heard on the radio there was a guy who had stopped paying his bills. You know, that wasn't very smart.
Well, they interviewed him, and he said, I don't know about you, but I haven't paid my bills in months. So.
Yeah, so, you know, now look where he is. So,
but I would, you know, so, I mean, if we really truly believed, I mean, instead of running around, I mean, you, I don't know what I would do. I mean, would you meditate? Would you have a bucket list?
I don't know that I'd have a bucket list. I think I've... pretty much done all the things that I've wanted to do within reason without getting too crazy. But I think I do have an inner knowing that there is something bigger out there, and I think I would meditate probably. I would meditate. I would try and get some sort of guidance as to what my next step would be or how to how my consciousness can survive this.
Change. I've thought about it. You know, I mean, we talk so much here, and we interview guests that talk about the power of thought and intention, you know, distant healing and so forth. So that could be a way, if we get more attuned as a society or as a world, that could be a way to change the course of events. I mean, it's not out of the question that everybody on the same wavelength, so to speak, on focusing. Let's say we found out that a meteor was heading towards the Earth, and if it hit, that would mean the end of the Earth. And science, if they had no options in terms of rocketry or missiles that could knock it out, and that was it, and they gave up, that would be the only thing left, right? So what if you had, you know, a billion people on the
same planet? That's always like what people, you know, like the doctor says, well, we've exhausted all of our options here. The only thing I could tell you to do is pray.
Right.
That's always what they say. You know, what we've exhausted, pray, 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 pray. Well, really, it is the power of prayer. Power of prayer, we've seen in scientific experiments, can do a lot of stuff. The problem is when you need a lot of that power together, like to say to maybe make the meteor change its mind.
Of course.
You're going to have enough naysayers that you're just not going to have, you know, oh, it's coming, it's coming. There's nothing you could do about it. And it just, you know, it's the same with your electing your public officials. You know, if everybody would go vote and vote against all the criminal politicians, we actually could have a democracy that works. But people aren't doing that because they're saying, oh, what's my vote? It's not going to count.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe, you know, we talk a lot about this paradigm shift and this new way of consciousness, and perhaps that's what the future holds. When people come to the realization that collectively we can change the course of events, or, you know, that we all are connected to not only each other but to the universe, maybe that's the way of the future. We can make things happen.
Right, and I think that's the shift. The shift is the knowledge that you can make things happen. That's the shift.
Well, you know, I just thought, you know, with the way that whole thing was playing out, that you know, the message that this preacher was giving, you know, that people should repent. I don't know that you could make up for a lifetime of bad karma, so to speak, in a day. You know, it may be, if there is such a thing as karma, I think it plays itself out over long periods of time. You know?
Right.
Maybe, you know, that goes back to the religious dogma. You know, it will absolve you of all your wrongdoings and your sins if you just do this.
Yeah, well, that's
do this, do that.
Religion, you know, and they could go right back the next day to doing the bad things that you do.
Well, until the next prediction, I understand that there's another date that's been set. You know, he said, "Oops,
October 21st.
Made a mistake in math."
Yeah,
it's always math that gets you. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to go to a break, and we come back. We're going to have a fascinating guest that's going to talk about synesthesia. And if you don't know what that means, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Maureen Seberg. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Bob?
And Maureen Seberg is a New York City-based journalist and author whose book on synesthesia, which is called Tasting the Universe, features first-time interviews with many famous synesthetes. Her work has appeared in the New York Times, the Huffington Post, the Daily Beast, the Daily News, Irish America, ESPN the magazine, and on MSNBC and PBS. A synesthete herself, she has moderated and presented at conferences and workshops throughout the world, and you can find out more information on the website about the book is www.tastingtheuniverse.com. Welcome, Maureen.
Thanks for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. Did read the book, and it's a wonderful book, highly recommended. And I guess a good place to start, I would imagine that a great number of people have never heard the term. So let's start by maybe explaining what exactly is synesthesia.
That's a great idea. Well, I'll give you the official definition first,
okay.
And it's a starting point. It's by no means complete if you're a synesthete. The official definition is that it's a neurologically based condition in which stimulation of one sensory or cognitive pathway leads to automatic involuntary experiences in that plus a second sensory or cognitive pathway. Okay, that is part of it. And that, to break that down into plain English, if I hear music, I will hear it, but I may also see colored forms drifting by. So there's the add-on. It always, it's important to note that synesthetes do function very well in the everyday world because they do have normal sensory responses to everything. It's just that they also have an additional one.
Mm. So, you know, when I read a book, you know, I see, you know, black ink on a white background. What might, you know, a synesthete see? I mean, would the letters
yes.
have color?
I see that.
Yeah.
I see that as well. They are usually black on a white background. But I get a little bit of an aura of a different color in front of each letter or number. So it's as though there were a sheet of cellophane atop the page with different colors for every letter and number.
Mm. So there's also, sound is often connected with synesthetes, together. So certain, might a certain color evoke a certain tone?
Yes, it can go in that direction as well. There are more than 50 types of synesthesia that have been identified to date,
mm-hmm.
and that is one of them, a color to a sound. Yeah. It can move in any direction of the senses. So you have some really interesting and peculiar things, like there are people who taste words. My friend James Wannerton, who is president of the UK Synesthesia Association, tastes almost every word that he says or hears. And that's wonderful if it tastes like cake, but not so wonderful if it tastes like something else.
So I would imagine. I would imagine that the definition of a word might have something might be something quite different than the taste.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, it is very rare that they would match at all. It's not metaphor related or definition related. It's quite random.
Yeah. I remember reading in the book an interview with, I believe it was Douglas Coupland.
Coupland.
He said something to the effect that the most beautiful place that he's been in is the ribbon aisle at Michael's. He said when you walk through, he felt like he needed earplugs or sunglasses. So I guess, is that something?
Yes, he gets weak in the knees around a lot of color, and it's it's a blissful feeling though, so it's not totally negative to him. And he's a really interesting case, not only because he's such a genius and he wrote Generation X and does all this incredible artwork besides, but he didn't have synesthesia at birth. With all due apologies to your listeners, he literally sneezed out a tumor about 20 years ago. Sorry for that graphic image, but
yeah.
It just shows what things can happen to people. And he had a brain injury as a result. And sometimes synesthesia results from a brain injury or a stroke or psychedelic drugs or temporal lobe epilepsy, sometimes as a result of blindness or deafness. So he is one of those unique people who knows life with and without synesthesia. I mean, myself as a journalist, I like to think I can be an objective person, but I realized I could hardly be totally objective about synesthesia because I've never known life any other way. So it was important to me to speak to Doug as well as to the great philosopher David Chalmers, who lost his synesthesia at the age of 20 and can compare life and with and without it. And both men conclude that it's better with synesthesia, which I found really interesting.
Yeah, and you've had I assume you were born with the ability, but I would imagine that as a child you thought that everybody was like yourself, that this was the way it was. So there was no label.
I did.
To it.
Yeah. I mean, that's such an important point to bring up. Thank you, because not only do you not necessarily talk about inner experience until later in life, I was also born into the 1960s. And I was a young, 4 or 5-year-old when the psychedelia was raging around the nation and around the world. And why would I think anybody with a tie-dyed T-shirt wasn't seeing what I was seeing? So,
yeah.
Oddly, however, when I did finally bring it up, because my why is the sky blue question was, Mommy, why is A always yellow? And, built into that question, obviously, is my assumption that she sees A as yellow, too, but why is it always yellow? And she thought about it for a moment and said, well, you must have memorized it that way in school. but I knew I hadn't.
So that's interesting.
So this is, and as a result, synesthetes, I know I asked other adults and raised it to friends over the years, but I eventually learned to just be quiet about it because clearly I wasn't perceiving things the way most other people were.
So does that always stay on? So you mentioned an example of seeing the letter A, and that's always yellow. Is that pretty? Is that always consistent? Like to you, an A would has always been yellow since childhood and remains that way.
Yes,
it doesn't shift. Yeah,
and that is one of the 5 points of diagnosis of synesthesia, that they remain pretty constant. I've seen a couple of letters morph over the years, but by and large, my letters and numbers are the same code to me that they were when I was a little girl and first aware of letters and numbers.
I mean, some believe that, you know, that there is a transcendent quality to synesthesia, that it can provide enlightenment and maybe a greater connection to another realm. And you also write about synesthetes becoming natural empaths. So, is that the same in your case? Do you find yourself, do you consider yourself to be an empath?
I do, but I didn't realize I was until I started reading the synesthesia research. You've probably even spoken about on the show or just been aware of mirror neurons that they're discovering in people's brains now. And these neurons have the ability to communicate with the neurons in other people's brains, proving what many of us have been saying for years, that we're all really connected. Well, synesthetes, according to the research, have a preponderance of these neurons. So I realized when I was a hard news reporter that I would really have a hard time shaking some of the things I was seeing and reporting on. Literally feeling pain in my body if I saw someone injured or just being an emotional wreck because of something that had happened to someone and not being able to forget it. But now that I look at the synesthesia research, I blame myself less. I realize I'm kind of wired that way, which means that synesthetes and empaths of all stripes really do need to be careful of their environments.
Yeah, it's a heck of a profession that you were in as a reporter, you know, trying to remain objective when you're feeling everybody's pain and anxiety.
I put myself through it, and you know, that's part of the first chapter of the book. I come to the realization, because my father was this hero cop who was always in the papers when I was growing up, and you know, the apple didn't fall too far from the tree. When I grew up, I wanted to be in the mix, too. I wanted to see some of the things that he had seen, although I don't think I was aware of this on a conscious level. But as many children do, they sort of follow in their parents' footsteps to a degree. But it took me a while, but I sort of came to the realization right around the time I wanted to write this book that this may not be the healthiest path for me.
I know.
And I think, you know, I stand witness to a lot of people in hard news. You know, they may not want to say it, but I'll say it for them. They are, I'm not saying me, but they are some of the bravest people who run into things instead of away from things. And they really have my respect, although I don't think that I want to go back out there and do that anymore. I want to write books.
And you do that well. You know, one of the people that you interviewed was Billy Joel, who has a type of synesthesia. What types? I know you mentioned there are more than 50 different types, but what type of synesthesia does Billy Joel have?
Billy Joel has sound to color, as well as color to sound and shape. And so he's such a sensitive soul, and I think that makes him a very prolific writer and very sensitive writer. about the human condition, as you can tell by his lyrics. So the empathy is clearly there. But what he told me about the nuts and bolts of his synesthesia is that when he's composing music and he's in that inspired state, and in his case he says it may be waking or sleeping because music comes to him in dreams as well, he sees drifting by a series of shapes and colors. And it seems to affect his bowels mostly, which many synesthetes report having stronger color sensations for bowels than other letters. But also his musical notes, he is literally encoded. He may not remember the melody upon waking, but he'll have a residue of the color and the shape. And because he knows which notes his colors and shapes correspond to, he can then translate that and begin composing. And I thought it was really significant that he told me he was afraid to talk about synesthesia, and his testimony means all the more to me as a result, because he was afraid of breaking the spell, as he said it, afraid that speaking of it somehow cheapened it. And I understand that feeling, and I think it emanates from the fact that despite being a very verbal, hopefully articulate person as a journalist, as much as I take pains to describe what this looks like and feels like, I'm here to tell you it's probably several orders of magnitude more beautiful and more complex than what language can get across. Hmm. And filling in the gaps are some wonderful young artists who are emerging. I'd like to mention one in particular, Carrie Furman, whose art I use in the last chapter of the book. She is a synesthete and an MFA in graphic arts, and she is able to create visuals of what we're seeing. And I think together with the words, that helps really bring it to light for people.
Yeah. I know,
so one of these ineffable things that, yeah, there are words for it, but because it doesn't look like anything in the physical environment, words somehow fall short.
Well, you know, and what's interesting is that when you read the accounts of people that had near-death experiences and they come back, they often talk of the ineffable. You know, they can't put into words the experiences, and here you're describing a similar thing. What's also interesting is that, according to some of the near-death experience research, experiencers come back and often develop synesthesia, and I'm sure you've heard that
before. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Yes, Pim Van Mommel and PMH Atwater have said that to me, and I think Dr. Grayson has confirmed that for you, yes?
Yeah. That's true. So it is something that that you can you don't necessarily have to be born with. There are external occurrences that might serve as.
No, I think it can happen throughout life.
Yeah.
And you know what's really interesting too? Anecdotally, myself included, a lot of synesthetes report OBEs, if not NDEs. So what is that? Is it some sort of residue of another place?
Hmm. Well,
it's really interesting.
Billy Joel, I also recall from your interview, I believe he said that, you know, he thought that synesthesia exists on a different plane, and, you know, and he taps into it. So synesthesia may very well be another, you know, form of consciousness, you know, and you know, or you want to call it another form of consciousness, another dimension, you know, another plane of the existence, but
I think you're right.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dr. Stuart Hameroff, who has been so kind to me, inviting me to conferences to present for his Tour the Science of Consciousness conferences, said to me that he believes synesthesia is a lower threshold to quantum consciousness. So we may be seeing the very building blocks of space-time.
Yeah, somebody mentioned in your book, I believe, towards the end of the book, that, or maybe it was you, that the the synesthetic mind is like having, you know, a broadband connection versus, you know, a connection to the infinite versus a dial-up connection. So you're on a fast track.
I think that's the case.
Yeah. I know.
There's a lot more information coming through. But somehow synesthetes, by and large, function with that information and sometimes go on to great creative endeavors from it as well. It's 8 times more common in the arts, according to the neuroscientist V.S. Ramachandran. And it seems to come up among musicians over and over and over again.
So it's clear that it's more prevalent among those who are creative. I guess, you know, one day science will figure out why, but I know that there's some scientific research that has taken place where they were putting synesthetes, I guess, under scanners to look at their brains, and apparently, you know, the two, you know, different areas light up in a synesthete's brain than in I don't want to say a regular, but a non-synesthete's brain. So, that's
interesting. If they put a synesthete in an fMRI machine, a functional MRI, and they stimulate them visually, they then look at the brain, and not only is the visual area lighting up, but maybe the hearing area as well is lighting up.
Hmm.
So they're getting two sensations where there should only be one. And thank goodness we live in this age where it can be proven like that, because not so very long ago, synesthesia was suspect and considered some sort of artistic conceit and hard to prove.
Yeah, and as you point out in the book, the Internet is been a godsend, so to speak, to a lot of synesthetes, because, you know, you're leading this this sheltered life, not telling anybody and not really having any source of information. Now the Internet comes about, and all of a sudden there's a community that you can share experiences with and learn.
Oh, absolutely. You're so right. Yeah, it's been a godsend to many people living in isolation. And, you know, there's a really interesting figure from Internet history who is a synesthete and who has helped so much. Dr. Robert Kalau, who was an engineer working at CERN, the Super Collider, which is, regardless of what Al Gore says, it's really where the Internet was born. And the scientists there created it as a platform to communicate with each other, and then released it to the public. So Dr. Kalau was one of these early scientists, early creators of the Internet. And when it came time to name it, his colleague, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, said, well, how about World Wide Web? And immediately, Dr. Kalau saw all those W's in his favorite color, dark green, and said, yes, let's go with that.
Hmm.
So the reason we type www every day of our lives now is because a synesthete thought that was really pretty.
Cool. We are talking with Maureen Seberg, author of Tasting the Universe, People Who See Colors in Words and Rainbows in Symphonies. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue this fascinating talk with Maureen. So stay with us, and we'll be back in 3 minutes.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world, but for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential, and research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest here tonight is Maureen Seberg. This show is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to Maureen Seberg, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. With these hard economic times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show, they want to see it continue, they love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website. And again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. And when you find your items, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. The holiday gift raffle is in full swing. We have five winners who will each win a one-hour medium reading with either Samara Angelet, Angelina Diana, Rebecca Anlow Cicero, Stephanie Ann Stevens, or Neil Zapowski. It's only $5 a chance, five chances for 20, and of course the more you buy, the less it is. Go to the website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org for instructions on how to enter, or you can just mail a check to Forever Family Foundation at 222 Atlantic Avenue, Oceanside, New York, 11572. We also have three holidays past events scheduled with a fourth coming up. The first one is December 3rd, 7 to 10 p.m. in the Greenwood Room at Best Western Berkshire Inn in Bethel, Connecticut with Joanne Gerber. The next one is on Saturday, December 10th from 7 to 10 p.m. in the Lexington Room at the Hampton in Boston, Natick in Natick, Massachusetts with Angelina Diana and afterlife advocate Dave Kane. And the third one is Saturday, December 17th, 7 to 10 in the Suffolk Room at the Melville Marriott in Melville, New York with Teresa Caputo. And we're asking you to hold the date of 11-11-11 for our annual conference weekend with our Freecher Friday night fundraiser, Night of Mediums. And this will be a limited seating conference and fundraiser. If you'd like to be on the preferred mailing list, please send us an email at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Bob, you take it.
Okay. And we're back. Thanks for staying with us, Maureen. You know, one of the things that I find fascinating, we touched on it a little bit before, but you report, as do your fellow synesthetes, that seeing these photisms, colorful forms, which could be the basic elements of consciousness on a quantum level, I mean, fractal vision, geometric shapes, and there's a commonality, which we also touched on, between people who had NDEs or maybe in deep meditation or even those taking certain hallucinogenic drugs. So do you think that there's a connection with all of these various, you know, modalities? I mean, is it are there ways that we're getting like a sneak preview of what, you know, what the world is made of?
I really do think so. And, you know, nothing has confirmed it more for me than in the past year when I've gotten to know a synesthete savant by the name of Jason Paget. In fact, he'll be my next book project. We're calling it The Man Who Sees Space-Time. His photisms, which as you describe are the colored forms that synesthetes see, are highly organized and highly fractal and geometric. And he sees that grid pattern that Einstein spoke about in everything around him. So I think finally we've got a synesthete who is also a savant, who doesn't have the challenges of Asperger's or autism and can clearly explain some of this. And, you know, as Dr. Stuart Hameroff says, it very well may be quantum. And he believes that it's happening, you know, the two prevailing beliefs are that it's happening as crossed neurons or lack of chemical inhibition between neurons in the brain. But Dr. Hameroff and Sir Roger Penrose have pioneered exploration into something even tinier than neurons, which are the microtubules inside of neurons. And he thinks that they may actually be the interface. And that would sit well with a lot of what synesthetes see, because it is very tiny and gossamer-like and fine strands or tiny little bits of light going by. So if the seed of all this were that tiny and fine, it would seem to make a lot of sense.
Mm. Now, there's one name that we didn't mention that you talked about in the book who had synesthesia, and that was Marilyn Monroe. Never would have figured.
Isn't that something? I love that. I was studying up at the Mailer Colony in Provincetown in 2009, and I had a wonderful professor there, Dr. John Michael Lennon, and he is an expert in all that is Mailer and was a friend of his. And he went back over Mailer's biography of Marilyn Monroe and found this tantalizing section in it where Mailer describes her as someone who is like a lover of rock who sees vibration when he hears sound. She did not have a skin like others. So It's not surprising to me that Mailer didn't use the word synesthesia in his era. No one did. No one has been using it until very recently, really, except for a brief fashionable period of synesthesia 100 years ago, which I can get into a little later. So I thought that he was talking about synesthesia, but the journalist in me wanted to confirm it with her survivors. So I reached out to her surviving niece, Mona Ray Miracle, in North Carolina. And not only does she confirm that that's what Marilyn Monroe was experiencing, she has it as well. And it does run in families, so that made me sure enough to put it in the book.
Wow.
But there you go. There's a creative person once again.
Once again, you're right.
In North.
Right. So it must be quite extraordinary for you when you go to a concert or you listen to a symphony or you're listening to a piece of music. I mean, do you also have a light show that counts with the notes?
I often do, although at concerts it can be really annoying because sometimes their light show doesn't match my own.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking in my mind, oh, no, not red, not red. This one's blue.
Right.
But, yeah, I do get color and shape and, not nearly as often as I would like because it's incredibly beautiful.
Mm. So what color is Tuesday?
Oh, it's gold, for sure. Although Itzhak Perlman said that my Tuesday is golden just because Monday is over.
Yeah, he would say something like that.
He has a great sense of humor.
Right. So, I mean, there are things, so not only days of the week, but, I guess months and certain pieces of music are always associated with the same, colors to you. And, if Tuesday was gold to you, for instance, I mean, you might talk to another synesthete and Tuesday might be red to them.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean...
Exactly. And I have a funny story about that. I was out to dinner with a synesthetic artist named Carol Steen, who's quite talented, and she said, Maureen, what color is A? And I said, yellow. And she said, my dear, A is definitely pink. There must be vitamins you can take. So not only do we, all have different colors, there's no Rosetta Stone for synesthetes except for a couple of clusters that A is often 50% of the time are red. And I's and O's and very linear things are either black or white. But the rest of it is a free-for-all. And we also get very attached to our own colors. So as I say, being at a concert with a light show has, I get that internal, oh, these colors are wrong, just the way Carol did when I announced my yellow A.
Hmm. So when we talk, for instance, if we talk to somebody that can communicate, such as a medium, and a medium might be able to communicate with spirit, and most mediums will say, well, I can turn it off when I need to, they sort of shut down. A synesthete really can't turn anything off. This is with you, I guess, 24/7.
Yeah, it is with you 24/7, although
right.
I have to say, unlike mediums who are blessed to be able to turn it off, we can shift our attention. So if I, as a writer, am working on some text or doing a bunch of reading, I liken it to studying with the radio on or stereo on. Sometimes you're focusing on the music, but sometimes you really need to focus on your studies, and you can shift. Most people know how to block things out a little bit.
Mm.
It's not gone, but it's reduced.
Right. Do you have the ability to spot other synesthetes? I mean, if you meet somebody, do you have that feeling or connection?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's really strange, but my friends say I have synesthesia dar, like gaydar, only for synesthesia.
Yeah.
And it seems that a bunch of us have this. I was recently able to identify the Nobel Prize-winning writer Orhan Pamuk as a synesthete. Just because I had a feeling, and I had not yet met him when I had this feeling, it was the way he wrote. To me, synesthetes and their metaphors are much farther afield than average writers. They don't go for the shade metaphor, they go for something pretty out there and extraordinary. And I noticed this in his writing, and so I asked him in person, and he admitted it. And thought it was pretty spooky. And then I was listening to that wonderful song from Disney's Pocahontas, Colors of the Wind, where they talk about the Indian princess being able to paint with all the colors of the wind. And I thought, whoever wrote that is a synesthete. So I reached out to the Broadway composer, Stephen Schwartz, the guy who's done Wicked and Pippin and Godspell. And he said, how did you know? And I said, I don't know, I just had a feeling. It's a feeling combined with some evidence of their of the way they speak or the way they write.
You know what I'm curious about? What happens when you dream? Do you when you dream, do you ever have a dream that's doesn't incorporate, you know, synesthesia? In other words, a pure black and white, flat dream with no intermingling of senses, or do you dream?
Yes, I don't have black and white dreams. I dream in color.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, I'm not overwhelmed by synesthesia in my dreams. And it's so interesting that you bring this up because I never really thought about it before. Maybe my mind is giving me a little break.
Could be. Everybody needs a break.
Unlike Billy Joel, who, you know, sees his next composition in his dream. But although my dreams are not necessarily that relaxing because I do have most of my OBEs in my dreams. So, you know, that's, I think so, that's part of the synesthesia as well.
In your OBEs, I mean, you often... looking down from above?
Yeah, sometimes I'm looking back at my body.
Yeah.
But I tend to, when I sit up, you know, you think it's you sitting up, but it's not you, or it's your astral body sitting up.
Yeah.
And I begin to fly. I don't always look back.
So I just
sort of float and go.
So I know we don't have much time left, but I mean, overall, it sounds like there certainly are drawbacks to having synesthesia, but they're far outweighed by the benefits. So, any recommendations to somebody who never really knew there was a name to it, but thinks they might have some of this ability? What course they should take? Yeah.
Well, please write to me at www.tastingtheuniverse.com, and I'll help you get a lot of resources that you'd like to read through and reach out to. And I'd also like to take the opportunity to urge parents to speak to their children about this over dinner one night. Even if you're not sure that they may have experienced this, do ask, because little kids pretty much don't bring it up. And I meet people in their 50s and 60s all the time who never had a person to talk with about this. And if you do identify your child as a synesthete, don't panic and don't run to the first psychiatrist you find in the phone book, because they're not all up to date on this. You can contact me and I'll put you in touch with the American Synesthesia Association and the Synesthesia List and some of the neuroscientists who can help. And I would also urge parents of synesthetes to please get them all of the arts and other training that supplementally to their basic education that they can possibly afford. Because I think there are several generations of lost synesthetes because early intervention didn't happen. These young children are not only highly gifted creatively and empathically, they also, because synesthesia acts as a mnemonic, have incredible memories. They have photographic memories much of the time, and their potential, in my estimation, is limitless. So I will be working as an activist going forward, trying to get this into the school systems and get teachers and parents aware.
Well,
and I thank you for the opportunity to say that. Because,
yeah, thank you so much. It's wonderful.
I don't think people should go through their whole lives like I did, half my life,
right,
without knowing what to do with it.
That's wonderful information. Appreciate that. And the book is Tasting the Universe, People Who See Colors and Words and Rainbows and Symphonies. The website is tastingtheuniverse.com. There is a link to Maureen's book on our website, an Amazon link where you can go on and purchase the book. It's wonderfully entertaining and informative. And thank you so much, Maureen, and we hope to be able to...
Thank you, and thank you for all the wonderful work the Forever Family Foundation does.
Thanks.
Really important work you're doing.
Thanks, and have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing. In need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steffi, Janet Mayer, Judith Lockman, and Wendy Lippo, and all the people who had been affected by the tsunami in Japan. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was Masuro Emoto back on May 9th, 2010, and we're still praying for the creatures in the Gulf. And with that, we'd like to say...
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.